Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the AlbumReview.net podcast. I'm Greg Potters. Many times I've had authors on the show, and in most cases, these authors have written books that incorporate and or are related to music in some shape or form. Today, I'm happy to welcome author Lisa Michaud to the podcast. Lisa Serena Michaud is an Italian-American writer based in France. Her work has appeared in the Huffington Post, Exo Jane, Narratively, Bonjour Paris, or Bonjour Paris, and other publications. She holds 4 evaluations at the Evergreen State College, and she joins us here today as she has written her first novel titled Slanted and Disenchanted. Now, I had the opportunity to meet Lisa prior to this interview and read her book. And when you're reading her book, you feel like you're really sitting down with Lisa, listening to her tell you a story. Slanted and Disenchanted is a novel set in 1999 and follows the main characters, Carla and Pete, through the new millennium and into 2001. Carla and Pete are in their early 20s, late teens, and they're both what you would consider disenchanted. They've got multiple family issues and, most importantly, have a drive to play music. When they get together and form a band, the two learn more about each other and eventually more about themselves. Set to a fantastic mention of songs from the 90s and early 2000s, music plays a big role in Slanted and Disenchanted and is arguably the third character in Lisa's novel. Lisa and I talk in this episode about her book and also go deep into our challenges growing up and how we each handled our own family issues. So sit back and listen to this interview with author Lisa Serena Michaud. Hello. How are things with you? It's been a while. Well, it's been probably 4 or 5 weeks since we last connected. How are things with you?
It seemed like March was like so long away.
I know, and here we are.
We're like, oh, it's in forever, and it's kind of like it came pretty quick.
It did. It flew. It really does fly by. How are things in France?
Good. It's been raining. I hate. I'm not somebody to complain about the weather, but it's been raining since October.
I know.
I feel like I live in Seattle.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I did live in Seattle. And I moved for this reason.
But you'll get some nice weather soon, right? It's coming maybe in the next month or so. I feel like you guys have similar weather patterns as the Northeast, where March and April can be teases where you might get one day that's warm and then the next day it's down to, you know, needing a sweater or a coat again.
Yeah, we'll get that really nice day. I mean, there's flowers everywhere. There's daffodils. Oh, nice. It's just the cherry blossoms are blooming because it's actually not cold enough. Uh-huh. And we're actually having a drought down south because there's not enough rain. We're getting flooded and it's drought down in like the like wine country.
Really?
So it's just climate mania.
And remind me again of your location. Like I think I mentioned to you last year, almost at this exact same time, and we left like the 28th or 29th of February to come back home, but we were up in Epernay and then Paris for a little bit as well. Where are you in geographically? Where are you in relation to that?
I'm 40 minutes outside of Paris.
Okay,
so cool. I'm like in the suburbs of Paris. My husband works in Paris, takes a train in and out of the city. Like I call it like we live on Long Island, France. You take the train, it's super quick and convenient. And so we're just outside of Paris.
I want to thank you, obviously, for sending me this. I'm in love with this. I was just telling my wife this morning over coffee that she should read it because I think, you know, as much as the musical references hit me and hit me in a really great way hard, I think that someone doesn't necessarily even need to appreciate the musical references to enjoy the book because it's a really, really good story. So like I had so many thoughts and it was great because I would read a chapter and then I would listen to a chapter and then I would read a chapter and I would listen to a chapter and then I would like get in my car and play it. So I feel like I've been living in your brain for the last like month. So things have been pretty busy over here and I've been working on a bunch of different things, but I wanted to spend as much time as I could just, going through your book. And I have so many questions for you. There's so many areas where I'm curious to learn, like how much this is a direct either reflection or just, if like, is Carla really you? I just have so many questions. So again, I'm like, I want to condense everything, but what stupid question to start. Was that you or any of the voices in the audiobook? Was that you or was that all AI generated? Or I don't know if you can share your secret.
No, not at all. I'm happy to share. No, those are actors. Okay. I went through an audition process and I heard a lot of audio and I picked Julian Cull and Zach Hoffman. They are my two actors and they did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. I want to plug them. My actors that really, we worked really hard. The three of us going back and forth. It took about 3 or 4 months and
really?
They just nailed it. They're amazing. Yes.
Interesting. And were you guys all virtual recording in different parts of the world?
Yeah. Zach is in Nashville. Jillian's in New York. And yeah. I was in Paris. And so they would just send me audio dumps of like chapters 1 to 5. And yeah. I would listen to it and then go through each minute and go, okay, you didn't pronounce this right. And then there was the French aspect, which Zach, he's not French. And
right.
He had to be a half French character. They
right.
are so amazing. I hope I can afford them for the second audiobook because they're so good. They're
yeah,
so good.
You've got the follow-up or the second book. Is it a continuation or I don't want you to give too much away and I don't want to give too much away during this interview, but like the new book that you've got coming out, has that been finished?
Yeah, it's being edited right now and it'll be
nice.
Out by the end of the year.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
It takes place in California.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I guess before getting into your book, I wanted to ask you some questions about yourself. Like when did you think or know you wanted to be a writer?
I think I always knew. I always wrote short stories. I used to write Weezer fan fiction in
Nice.
High school. And my brother found it and he was like, this is really weird stuff. And I was so like embarrassed. I was like, really? And I didn't realize that I just wanted to write. And so I would write articles in my new school paper about like the new Sleater-Kinney album. I went to a college that focused on writing. I went to Evergreen in Olympia, Washington.
Right.
It was all writing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't think it could be a real job though. So I just did it as a hobby and I worked in corporate fashion in New York. And then I moved to France and that was the only job I could get was writing little articles online for websites that are interested in what is cool in Paris, new music, bars, stuff like that. And I just started writing every day. I started a little blog, which is defunct now. And I went from there.
And what motivated you, Lisa, to move to France?
Well, my grandmother lived here for 30 years. My grandmother's Mexican, so she's not French at all. And she moved here to become a jazz singer. And I actually hear her music on the local jazz stations from time to time. She had this like one mini hit that was put out on DSK Records, which is like it's like an iconic little record label that was based in Brooklyn. And so I just wanted to follow, I guess, in her footsteps, because she always would say to me, she was so grand. She would say, you just have to move to Paris. Like it was so easy. And she had passed away. And I found out actually on YouTube because I found a video of her performing and somebody said, oh, she recently died. And I was like, that's my grandma.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, I found out my grandmother died on YouTube in 2009. And then I just said, I'm moving to Paris and with pretty much no money, a visa or anything. I just went and was teaching English as like a side hustle and paying really low rent, living in a tiny apartment with someone I barely knew and just living the bohemian lifestyle until I found my way and became an au pair. And so I think I was just following my grandmother's like musical footsteps.
I can't remember if I said this to you the last time we talked, but I used to work in an office corporate setting and there was one guy who's a friend of mine. And every morning I would say to him, hey, Gary, what's up? How you doing? And he would go, living the dream, Greg, living the dream. And I remember like laughing at that, being like, yeah, we're not living the dream. We're working in an office staring at a computer all day. But you were, in my estimation, you're pretty much living the dream. And, you know, it's like, as a kid, I thought to myself, the cool places to go would either be Hollywood or Paris. And Paris has so much more, I think, than Hollywood. You know, if you want to be an actor or a rock star, you know, at least in the 80s, you had to move to Hollywood, or in the 90s, maybe Seattle in the early 90s. But as I was learning more about your story, I was like, she literally was, and sounds like she still is, living the dream. So I just have to commend you for that, because it's, I faced a lot of hesitation and fear as I was getting into my 20s. I related, I feel like, a lot with your characters, Pete and Carla, because, you know, I was in a band at the same time, and I ended up sort of sadly hanging it up. I mean, I still play, but like hanging up going on the road and playing gigs, because I thought, maybe I need to, you know, get a more steady job so that I can have money to get a car and an apartment and things like that. And so I have the utmost respect for people that just take those risks. And it seems like it's a calculated risk, obviously, because you had a connection, but you also had a desire to, you know, just get out there. And it's proof right here. You know, you can't get anywhere unless you at least try and take some of those risks. So it was one of the reasons why I wanted to chat with you on this podcast, because aside from all the work that you've done, I'm just always drawn to learning more about folks and how they operate when they, you know, take calculated risks like that. So props to you. I just wanted to say that as we dive deeper into the conversation. Now, you're welcome. You told me some great stories the last time we talked, that you saw Wilco in concert in France. I wrote this down the last time, and you took your son to watch the show. And lead singer Jeff Tweedy, he called him out in a polite way during the show, like, hey, look who we've got here in the audience.
Yeah, this was only last summer. So this is like still a very fresh story in our family. It's like part of our lore now. And he kind of noticed this 7-year-old in the audience. And my son was so excited, and he drew a picture for the band, and he didn't write anything on it. Well, he didn't write what it was. And he said, "These are, dear Wilco, you rock. Here are my 2 favorite songs." And it was a hummingbird sitting on top of a camera.
And oh my God, that's awesome.
Took the thing and he read it to the audience. And Jeff totally teased my son. He goes, "Well, you got to learn life's lessons. You're not hearing any of those songs tonight." And my son, he's so sweet. He's like, "No, it's okay, man. It's okay. Like, playing, like, I'm cool." But when we watched the video again, because my husband was filming the whole thing, Jeff went, "I'm just kidding." But we didn't hear that part. So we were like, okay, it happens. And my son had to go to the bathroom, and Wilco started playing Hummingbird.
Hummingbird, right?
And
yeah.
Jeff Tweedy turns to me, mom, and he's like,
Where's George?
And I was, and the whole audience, front row, was looking at me like, well, where's George? After all of that, George was hanging out with the security on the side of the stage.
Oh my God.
He had come back from the bathroom with my husband. And Jeff goes, "Don't worry, mom. George is okay. Hanging out, VIP, drinking a beer. You're all..." And he got to take, they gave my son the set list, Glenn's sticks, the picks, wow. And we have it framed in our living room now.
That's unbelievable. You're going to remember that for the rest of your life. And I'm sure if he hasn't already, he certainly will. Those are things you just don't forget. No. You also mentioned that you're into 90s punk, amongst a lot of other music. And it was clear in your book too, because you had so many references, which I have to call out a few of them in a little bit here. But like, growing up, I guess, was music considered sort of an outlet for you, Lisa? Like, did you immerse yourself in music to escape?
Yeah, I think so. I grew up in New York City, and we had a tragic death in our family, and we had to move to Long Island like within a week. Mm-hmm. And I went from New York City, really, you know, the diversity of just New York City in the 80s and 90s, to Long Island, where the moms didn't work and everyone was really, really rich. And I don't, it's not that I have anything against that, but I just didn't feel like I fit in. And I mean, these girls were wearing really expensive clothing. I was wearing hand-me-downs, and I thought that was cool. Like, I was wearing my mom's like vintage sweatshirts, and I would tell people, I'm like, this is my mom's from the 70s. And people like, this one girl goes, oh my God, you're poor.
Oh my
And
gosh.
yeah, and I just remember just being like, oh shoot, I'm in a whole other world. So I tried to fit in for 2 years. I pretty much embarrassed myself, and I just said, you know what? F this. And I just turned to music. I discovered Nirvana, I discovered Hole, I discovered Sonic Youth, and Pavement. I just was like, you know what? You guys don't get me. You don't even like me. My high school reunion people still don't like me. And I just said, you know what? Forget it. You know, there are some people that are really cool that I still have friends with in high school, but for the most part, I didn't understand anyone and they didn't understand me. So I turned to music, I learned how to play guitar, and that's it. And in my book, it says, I guess I didn't hate high school, but I think high school hated me because everyone just thought I was a big dork.
Now you mentioned Hole. Is that, and I recall at one point in your book, Carla mentions, and keep me honest here, but something to the effect of like, what was the first album that really influenced you? And she said, I think it was her that said, Hole lived through this. Was there some personal connection to that?
Yes. That I remember. That was the first CD I ever bought with like my own money. And that was the first concert I saw September 21st, 1994.
Nice. We always remember the date, like the date and year, everything of our first show, right?
Everything. And Weezer opened and it was life-changing. I've never been the same since.
Yeah,
So
I know what you mean. Yeah.
yeah.
The sky was made of amethyst, and all the stars were just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how to say no.
And then I think Pete's character, it was The Stranger, Billy Joel, which is also a great album. It just throughout the book, I got such a taste of the range in musical influences, and just in the first chapter as well, which I'll get into in a minute. But so you mentioned a lot about your family life, and so that makes a lot more sense why music would be an outlet for you. Did you have any brothers and sisters, or were you an only child?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a house full of Italian boys, so women are just like there to help out, and it's just I don't want to make generalizations, but my family's a little sexist, so and I sell that to their face, like, and being the only girl, like the boys could do no wrong, and just I as a female always has to push a little harder, and I was one of five boy cousins and two brothers. So, yeah. So I definitely turned to music also because I just had to tune everyone and their accents out, which I know I have an accent too. But yeah. So music was a big part of like trying to find my place in a family that really puts the importance on the men.
It's making so much more sense now because you seem more and more like Carla as I'm talking to you. Like I feel like I'm talking to her, but yeah, my parents, probably like yours, were baby boomers. My grandfather flew in the war. Both my grandfathers did, and my grandmothers were, yeah, they were, house mothers, right? So I remember my mother telling me a story of a dinner one time when, the dinner was over and all the women got up to clean the table. And my mom had just met my dad, and my mom was still sitting there, and everyone was looking at her funny. And I remember being a kid hearing that story and just being, if I'm I'm honest, a little disappointed. But I also, as I've grown and matured, not that it's acceptable, but realized that that was a lot of what it was like. Now, this was in New Jersey, so similar part of the country, but just that, not just an Italian family, but just that was sort of the MO, for lack of a better term, I guess, back then. Without patronizing you, I do know a lot of women who grew up in mainly boy families with a lot of brothers. And if anything, and I'm sure you can attest to this, that it certainly toughened him up. And I can remember being like, you know, I really like this girl, like as a friend in junior high or high school. And then I'd find out like, oh, I like her because she has like six brothers and they just beat the crap out of her all the time. And she's just tough as hell. And so, you know, I always felt like that was a positive trait in many ways, because you do have to push through that. I'll just quickly read this blurb from the back of your book. Slanted and Disenchanted is the provocative. Provocative is definitely a great term too, by the way. The first book by Lisa Serena Michaud, coming of age Disenchanted series, told with wry humor and nostalgic 90s undertone. It's high fidelity on the open road that explores sexual tension and friendships, life after high school, the confusion of adulting. Say that again. The love and chaos of family and the soundtracks that get us through it all. I had to copy that down and read that, because I can remember so many times in college walking around with friends and saying like, what song is the soundtrack of your, you know, life today? And so I felt a lot of connection in so many ways to that. So diving into your book a little bit here, Lisa, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed it. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the show. I wanted to start by commending you and your deep, deep musical references, almost like right out of the gate in the first chapter, when you're describing one of the characters waking up in the morning and determining what time it was by looking at the sun shining in the room, like a rock and roll sundial. I'm quoting her book here, like a rock and roll sundial. If it covered half of Herbie's analog African mask on the Headhunters poster, it meant mid-morning. Once it crept over to the New York tenement buildings in Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, it meant lunchtime. And when it continued on to the psychedelic rendering of Death and Fertility on Oxamoxoa, it was afternoon. I can tell you, I was reading that first chapter and my kids said to me, Dad, I've never seen you read a book and then just start cheering out loud. It was like you were watching a football game or a hockey game. And you just started going, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, in so many ways, those references are great. But I can remember being a young high schooler and being into glam rock, basically, your Poisons, your Warrant, your Motley Crue. And a friend of mine one day said, sit down. I'm going to play you Herbie Hancock, and I'm going to play you Pink Floyd, and I'm going to play you Jimi Hendrix. And he didn't live too far from me, and still to this day, because I'm nearby the neighborhood I grew up in Boston, I drive by his place, which I don't think he lives there anymore, and I always have those memories. But when I heard that album from Herbie Hancock, Headhunters, it definitely changed my whole perception of music.
Thank you.
And the fact that you're referencing it in the first chapter, I was like, okay, I'm in for a story here for sure. So you also put in Art Blakey as a reference in there too. So again, like just the range of everything, I was really impressed with. Diving into some of your characters, I have to ask. So Carla and Pete are your two main characters. For Pete, you know, he mentions his mom identifies herself mostly as a New Yorker and her dad is French. How much of your reality was based off of that?
Well, with the Pete character, it's so funny. So many people in my life, a lot of my guy friends are like wanting to know if they're Pete. Right. My husband's like, I'm French. He's obviously me. Right. And the big joke is, I think Pete is my son. I think that, my son was 4 when I wrote this first book. He's 8 now. And my son is half French. He loves all of that music. His musical references are actually very impressive for an 8-year-old. And he's got a tough New York mom and a French dad. And he says things sometimes, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, did I like manifest this character through like psychically knowing what my son was going to be?
Right.
So that's a big joke. I actually think Pete is my son.
One of the topics that really hit me hard and made me think a lot was early in the book in chapter 3 when Carla writes, I've got it written here, as we got older, our parents were around a lot more than when we were kids. I remember being as young as 8 and letting myself into the house after the bus had dropped me off up the street. Even if my brothers weren't home, it made me feel sort of unloved. And when I expressed this, my brothers called me dramatic. I couldn't be mad, they explained, because our parents worked and not every girl on Long Island have a live-in nanny. So this resonated so much with me, Lisa. I had to call it out. My wife and I have gotten to the point now where we're so busy that unfortunately we're working longer hours, both of us, and our kids are 12 and 13. And many times I find myself feeling guilty for, you know, telling them just let yourselves into the house after school. But, you know, we leave them alone on average for 3 to 4 hours a day. And I guess it doesn't sound like a big deal, but in your description of how Carla felt, I couldn't help but feel a little guilty. And I know that wasn't maybe your intention, but my boys are really responsible now and they're well-behaved. And my wife and I still take a lot of opportunities as we can to make ourselves feel like we're needed by them. But I guess it's just part of growing up and a new part of parenting for us. So I had to call out that mention as well, because it just made me think a lot. You know, I found myself many times reading your book and then putting it down and just like thinking. And I really think that that's the definition of a great book. You know, you relate to it. It's sort of like a song. You know, I'm getting a little cheesy here, but I really feel that way. Was that something that you manifested as well? Like, did you feel that way? Because I can remember that as a kid being, I have a tendency, Lisa, to be like, want something so bad, right? And then if I get it, then I'm kind of like, oh, it's odd. But I sometimes feel that there's an excellent quote in the movie Swingers where this guy was saying like he's trying to get over his girlfriend, and then when he finally did, he missed the pain. And I remember sitting in a room with other people watching the movie, and they were like, that doesn't make any sense. And I was like, that makes perfect sense to me, because you lived with it for so long, even if it was painful. So I'm getting a little deep here, but I mean, that really made me think, and it didn't necessarily make me think I feel guilty, but it brought me to peace with the fact that like right now, this is just the way it's got to be. Was this something that you, I'm just really interested to ask you this. Was this something that you experienced when you were a kid or even as a parent?
It was like a callback to us latchkey kids, which are like very Gen X, early millennial thing. Totally. We were latchkey kids. And I think I was trying to just like wink at that. But yeah, I mean, I was letting myself in and do New York City apartment at 8 years old. I would go to camp in New Jersey and the bus would drop me off and the bus wouldn't like wait to see if I got in. And sometimes I just wouldn't have the key. So I would just sit in front of my stoop. And there were times where I was just like, you know, I have a fantastic relationship with my mom, but like, and she'd be really sad if, you know, she heard this. And It did make me feel like forgotten. But my mom is a single working mother, and as a mom now, I understand it. She would be like running back from 11th Street. I'm coming, with her New York accent and her Dr. Scholl's flip flops. And so it was just kind of like I was trying to set the tone of the generation, of the era, because Carla's parents are obviously boomers as well. So it was just that. My son now letting himself in by himself. Are you kidding me? My son is such a prince. I think I'm like overcompensating for my childhood. Like, he
I
doesn't even
think
know how
I've
to
done
tie
the
his own
same.
shoes.
I think I've done the same, Lisa. And it really made me think a lot about that too. Just from that standpoint, it was really deep. I have just have a tendency too to just sometimes overthink things too. But I really enjoyed this journey because, like I said, I would read a chapter and then put it down and think a little bit and think like how that, for folks who get an opportunity to read this, especially if you grew up during that time, if you were a child of born in the 70s, child of the 80s, were born in the early 80s and came into your own in the 90s, you're really going to relate to this, whether you're a male or a female. The beauty of podcasting is that we can edit. So if at any point this isn't comfortable to you, please let me know. But I wanted to ask, I couldn't help but really feel a, I don't want to say a connection, but feel sometimes in parts of the book, sorry for Carla, especially because of the relationship with her mother. And I just was broken hearted by her character, Carla's mother, who, is an alcoholic and very verbally abusive. I guess how did that man manifest? Where did that come from? I mean, it's such an interesting character. I hope it's not based from a lot of truth. But I really felt like that complemented the book well, and it really made you cheer for Carla more. But I mean, I can remember like cleaning up my kitchen one night after dinner and listening to your book and being like, that bitch, like just out loud saying that about the character, the mother and all the awful things that she said. Where does this come from? Or is this something that, you wanted to add in there to make it interesting? I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing that.
No, it's fine. That was definitely autobiographical, and it just alcoholism runs in my family, and it's just something I deal with every day. So it is what it is. But I do have a fantastic relationship with my mom, but those things sometimes happen, and it's just, you just work through it, and I think it's made me stronger, and I think it's what inspired me to move as much as I did, because I knew that I wanted to see more of the world, and it made me very, very self-reliant. And it just, so that those scenes were very autobiographical, and I held back the first draft of the book. I didn't include that, and my editor was like, she doesn't have any inner conflict. What Carla sounds, she seems like she's hiding something from everyone. And I knew what it was. And so I rewrote it with what I really wanted to write. And I was nervous that I'd get in trouble. And I wrote it. And my editor was like, that's the missing link. And I just said, you know what? And it was really cathartic, this experience, because I feel like I was able to make peace with a lot of things. Once it's on paper, it's printed, it's in a book, and I was able to move on from it. It's this unspoken thing in my family. Everyone, it's like this pink elephant in the room. So we just skirt around that part of the book.
I commend your bravery, and it's something that my guess is that now you feel more alive that it's out there, and that's something that runs through my family as well, and I've been very, conscious of it, and I've lost relatives to it. So again, like within 5 minutes of opening your book, I felt a connection on so many levels. I mean, at first it was the music, and then it was the feeling of growing up too fast, by letting yourself in the house. And then it was the feeling of, being in a family where that is present. And the beauty of being a parent is, regardless of our strengths and weaknesses, we still love our kids. And it was clear that that was something that the character Carla and her mother had, but it was something that was glaring. And I just feel like it was such an example of what can be reality in a lot of families. And so it didn't make me think like, oh, you know, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is happening to her. It made me think, she's not glossing over anything. She, meaning you, Lisa, like, she's not glossing over anything. She's really writing about what happens in a lot of families. And I'm really delighted to hear that you have a good relationship with her, because that's so important. And I think that, you know, speaks to your maturity, because I do know some people who had those experiences and they no longer talk to their family members where they had those differences. So that kind of leads me into my next question. I'm always interested to ask my guests this question, like, how do you handle stress? Or do you?
Well, I stopped drinking a year and a half ago.
Good for you.
Yeah, like, I'm like, not a drop. And
that's amazing.
I realized that alcohol was like really playing a part in my anxiety.
Yeah.
I had a lot of it and a lot of like that, like chitter chatter in the brain. Yeah. So once I eliminated that, I was able to deal with things more head on. And so I really think that eliminating alcohol for me, because I know this is a very touchy subject. I know people get very upset. Because I love a glass of wine too, and I get it. There's nothing wrong with drinking, but for me, it contributed to anxiety, insomnia, and depression. So once I remove that, I feel that I'm able to manage concerns better. But deep breathing, meditation, I know how cliche that sounds, and it's just 5 minutes of just sitting down and just trying to just accept the day as it is. I do YouTube yoga, and nothing fancy or twisty, anything. It's mostly just like hanging upside down, feet up on the wall, stuff like that, and just like breathing. And it really works. And it's free. It's like the cheapskates.
There's so much out there. This is getting a little on the scary side because of all the similarities here. So, you know, I can't help it. You know, I've been going through the process myself of, you know, slowly tapering off my drinking. I was never a really big drinker, but I was always aware that there was that, you know, that it existed in my family tree. And I went to college, and I think it's changed a lot today, but maybe for our generation, maybe it's different when you're living in New York City, but, or Long Island, but, you know, when I got to college, it really did seem like the movies. And maybe it was just where I went. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that it has contributed significantly to anxiety, insomnia. And I think insomnia is really at the top of the mountain. If you can control your sleep, then you have really, by control, I mean, you know, if you get enough of it, you can really get a handle on how you solve problems. And I've really been thinking about this more over the last 2 years. And I'm having more and more friends that are stepping away from alcohol. And it's almost like I have actually like interviewed them and just asked them like what their journey's been like. And for some, it's been really hard. And for some, it's been easier. I would never say it was easy for anybody, but just, you know, some have said to me, I've never looked back. What kind of tool, like, do you have like a structured meditation thing, or is it just sort of what you were saying? It's just that deep breathing. And when you notice you're getting into a moment, do you just sort of tell yourself, I have to pause and just take a step back?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of feet up on the wall. So I bring like just a blanket or something to the edge of a wall and put my feet up and put your body in that like 90 degree angle and breathe and just look at the ceiling. And it feels very What About Bob-ish. I know that baby steps, it seems that way, but it feels really good because the blood starts rushing down. You're taking deep breaths in. I just tell myself, I don't have to do anything for the next 5 minutes but this.
Yeah.
And there's something very comforting about knowing that you don't have anything else to do but put your feet up on the wall. And then by the time I'm done with it, because your feet do get tired because the blood really does come rushing down, I feel like refreshed, like physically refreshed, because I just had given like my insides like a kind of like a shake up a little bit.
Right.
And but no, I don't have like a a whole like setup thing. I try and get up at 5 a.m. in the morning because it's a great
Oh,
time
good
to
for
work on
you.
my scales, to get some yoga in, play with my cat. I really do enjoy playing with my cat more than you know. Like it's something I do. But I have to carve time for it because I do have a very packed schedule. So on the mornings, it's just me and my cat in the kitchen, and I do my yoga, I do my guitar lessons, and I do my meditation, and it's quite lovely.
I'm Greg Potters with albumreview.net. Are you looking to start your own podcast? I can save you a ton of time and money by helping you launch, publish, and grow your podcast. So this includes things like finding the equipment, the software, and tips and tricks that are going to be right for you and your budget. Also, if you're looking for things like editors, designers, or you just want to find out what the best platform to use is, that's what I do. So you can find me at albumreview.net or message me directly at gpotters@albumreview.net.
Southwest to forget her. She appears in his dreams, but in his car and in his arms, a dream could mean anything. A cheap sunset on a television set could upset her. Still in your past, floating fast like a hummingbird. His goal in life was to be an echo, the type of sound that floats around and then back down like a feather. But in the deep chrome canyons of the loudest Manhattans, no one could hear him or anything. He slept on a mountain in a sleeping bag.
And how long have you been playing guitar?
Oh God, that's a
For your
loaded.
whole life?
Yes, and I'm t and I when you hear me play, it doesn't show at all. So
Oh,
this
I bet there's
past few
some
years,
BS.
I
I bet that's
really,
BS.
though it's really, I play little shows for fun. For the second book, I'm writing songs for the book. I
Oh,
want to
cool.
include like the band's some kind of songs to include as like a soundtrack to the
Nice.
book. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see. So, but yeah, this year I took it, I'm taking it seriously. I'm taking guitar lessons and also music theory class, but it's all in
Oh
French,
man.
so I have to translate everything.
Man, that just makes your brain work harder and just keeps it more in shape, I think. So I think I told you my son is fluent in French, or pretty darn close, and he's 13, and it's so impressive to me. And when we were going around France last year, this time last year, he got so many compliments from, staff at different restaurants at how good his accent was. And I was just so proud. I took Spanish
Totally.
growing up,
Amazing.
but once I stepped back from it after college, unfortunately, when I didn't use it, I lost it. Now I know it's a muscle that you can retrain, but it was just so awesome to see him walk through France and communicate. And then he'd look to me or my wife and be like, "Oh, this is what they were saying," And of course, almost everybody we met could speak English pretty well, which always made me feel guilty. But it just filled me with, so much pride. And so I'm glad to hear that you have a lot of things in order in your life, and it's clear. And it sounds like once people take this step, a lot of people go through it. So another deep question for you. What inspires you today? Like, what gets you inspired to create?
Definitely music. There's so much of it now, so many new releases, and we have access to so much music. So I know that's the quick answer. But I go on walks. I love going on walks with my headphones, and then I just let my mind roam. And it's the mixture of movement, nature, and I'm in France, so, and in the winter, it's just such a beautiful moment. You smell the chimneys, and I don't know what people are burning in their chimneys. It smells like vanilla, clove, nutmeg,
Wow.
nag champa. I feel like I'm in like a new age store, but I'm in the
Wow.
forest because we're in a forest. We're in the Fontainebleau forest. So we are in the hunting forest of French royalty. So, Louis the 16th would come here and hunt. This was his like country estate from Versailles. And so I walk through the forest every day, actually, when it's not, even if it's raining, but if it's not downpouring too much. And I just have music, or I don't. It's really that nature movement, those fresh smells of the like just the dense forest with the chimneys, and it's so humid here. It reminds me of the Pacific Northwest. So
Yeah,
that
sounds like it.
inspires me. And I'm constantly taking my phone out and writing notes down.
That's what I was just going to ask. Like, do you break your, for me, a lot of times when I have a thought, I'll break my concentration to write down the thought, but then unfortunately, sometimes I can't get back to that creative. So I'm still battling with that. I bring a notepad sometimes because I'll be like with my phone and I'll be like, hey Siri, blah, 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 blah. And then it will put the note in the wrong place, and then I'll go looking for the note. So it's like I need a better plan on how to, because when you're flowing, whether it be on a walk or on a run or whatever, you're on a bike ride, a lot of times, and even as songwriters or authors, you get a thought. So many interviews I've heard and even done with artists, regardless of their art, they're like, yeah, I've got a in the old days it was a dictaphone. I actually used to have a dictaphone and I would like talk into it. But I'm always curious to hear people's stories on how they jot down some of those thoughts, because that's really when your brain is ticking, I think, is when you're in a creative atmosphere. So good for you for getting out, because you need that. And I've certainly been in positions where I've been burnt out just being in my house all the time. And then I'm like sitting down to write one day and I've got just nothing, like nothing's coming out. And but then the next day the sun will be out and I'll go on a long walk in the woods. And all of a sudden I get home and I have a small cup of coffee, which never hurts. And the ideas just come flowing.
Yeah, it's
So.
true. And you have to write down everything. In Jeff Tweedy's book, How to Write a Song, he
Yeah.
says, do not let the idea go. You will never find it again. Just write it down somewhere. So I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and I'm jotting down a note, and I hate it because I have to grab my glasses and it's a
Right,
whole
right.
thing, but I'll forget. I'll
Yeah.
forget. So,
Totally.
and Jeff, if Jeff says you have to write it down, then I'm
Yeah.
going to take Jeff's advice because
I'm
he's
with
so,
you. I'm with you
yeah.
on that. I'm with you on that. I'm a huge fan of that band and I've seen them multiple times here in the Boston area. So, with that, I always like to ask this. If you had to pick your top five albums, and it's probably difficult to put those, give me your top five.
Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, easy. I can do, let's say, King Crimson in the Court of the Crimson King. There, boom. Third, I could do Nirvana's In Utero. I like that better than Nevermind. I
Yeah.
think it's darker because Steve Albini produced it, and he just
Any
basically
album
did.
with a song Rape Me on it is definitely going to be a little darker.
Definitely gonna be darker. And like what I love about that album is that, the DGC, the Geffen label, was like looking for the follow-up to Nevermind. And Kurt Cobain just did a big F you, got the guy who was in Big Black to produce it, freaking Steve Albini, and gave him $1 million and just said, produce my next record, like make it, and the record company was breathing down Nirvana's neck. And hearing the tracks, I think the single was Heart Shaped Box, the first single, and they were like so unhappy with that. That was the big follow-up to Smells Like Teen Spirit. So Nirvana's In Utero, Blur, Park Life, and the fifth one, Sleater-Kinney's Dig Me Out.
Nice. I had an opportunity to see Sleater-Kinney open for Wilco. I
Yes,
think it was 2 years
that's
ago.
amazing.
So that
Yeah.
was my first experience. But when I was reading your book, I was like, oh, she would have liked to have been at that show. I'm sure you've probably seen both of the bands in concert many times. I know you obviously shared your Jeff Tweedy story. So,
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen them a few times. I saw, yeah, Sleater-Kinney. I saw them My first time I saw them was in 1996, and so that was really an exciting time because the venue, it was such a small venue. Helium opened, actually, it was probably 97, like to be precise. And then we saw them here in Paris. What's great about seeing like these indie bands, like these bands probably play like 10,000 person capacity venues in the States, but here
Right.
they play smaller venues. So it
Sure.
reminds me of the 90s
Yeah.
because they have a smaller fan base
It's a
here.
lot more intimate. A lot more
It
intimate,
really
right?
is. It
Yeah.
really is.
Yeah. In regards to your writing style, like, do you have a, this question actually came up. I was watching, I'm obsessed with the PBS documentary of Ernest Hemingway. Obsessed. I've
Okay.
watched it like
Okay.
12 times. You have to,
I'll check it out. Okay.
see it.
I'll
It's
check it
long. It's
out.
like four parts, but I mean,
Excellent.
you know,
Yeah.
he was a very, very, very troubled man, but I won't dwell on it too much. But like, this was the first documentary about a writer where they had Jeff Daniels, the actor from, you know, Dumb and Dumber and many other films. He was the voice of Ernest in the documentary, and he would just start reading passages from some of Hemingway's books, and I had no substances in my body, and I felt myself like floating on a cloud just listening to his words. So I was watching it again the other day just for fun, and I remember him talking about, or Jeff Daniels as him talking about when he wrote, and he had this process and style. When you write, do you have a process? Like, you like to get up at 5 in the morning? Like, do you typically write in the morning? Do you write in the evening? Is it just whenever a thought comes? Like, what is your process, if one even exists?
I have a writing block of time, and it's you can't penetrate it. Nothing happens between I drop my son off at school at 8:30, and I come home and I work until 1 in the afternoon, and
Awesome.
there's no social media. I'm on lockdown, but it works fine because anyone who would call me is in New York, so they're
Yeah.
sleeping.
Right,
So,
right, right,
but it's
right.
just this time block that I've had for now 15 years that I just. For me, it's like if someone's like, oh, let's get a coffee, like I'm just it's no. It's just that set time, it's for writing. And then
You're diligent.
once 1 p.m. comes around, then I have lunch and it's just I don't think about writing again, but I do have my notes, but I will never open up my document and touch it. I don't write on the weekends at all. I do
Good
other
for you.
things.
Good for
Yeah, no,
you.
so it's Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. or 8:40, whatever, till about 1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. This has been such an inspiration. And in terms of like writers or authors, do you have any major influences?
My major influence is Charles Bukowski.
Really?
I love him. I
Nice.
do. He's a misogynistic drunk,
Yeah.
but I love his writing style. I bought his first book when I was 18 years old in the Evergreen bookstore in college. It's called Women, and it is not a book an 18-year-old girl should be reading. It is his descriptions of women are just god awful. But what I liked about it was it's accessible, and he's just telling a story, and he's not trying to sound literary. This is just his life. He's telling the story, and it gets gross sometimes. It's boring. Like life is boring sometimes, and I just like that
Totally.
realness to
Yeah,
it. And
right.
he's my favorite author. And it just, most guys, when I tell them that, they're like, but most women hate him. And I say, I know that, but I maybe it's growing up with all boys. I can relate to that. You know, I grew up being
Yeah.
farted on all the
I'm sure you did.
like, suffocated with pillows and jumped on. So Charles Bukowski isn't going to scare me.
If there was a book out there that you thought was a must read, what would it be?
Well, that one for sure. And then let's see. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. As a writer, this is, I mean, I could give you a million
Hey, writer's
autobiographies,
block comes
like
up all the time, right? Right. So for
Just
some,
Kids by Patti Smith is amazing. Just
yeah.
Kids.
Mentioned the
I
Jeff
just
Tweedy book, obviously, which is on my list to get.
the Jeff Tweedy book. I'm actually on my I have a TikTok channel and I talk about rock books. I do little reviews on rock biographies, autobiographies. And tomorrow I'm going to be discussing Viv Albertine of the Slits,
Oh,
her
wow.
book, Music, 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 Boys, 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 Close, Close, Close. Or I forget that I get the title, the words mixed up sometimes, but that was a fantastic read because she was in a band with a pre-Sex Pistols, Sid Vicious. This is like 70s London, so that whole punk
Right.
landscape.
Right.
And She, her lead singer is 15 years old, Aria, and it's just this walk through London in the 70s during the punk scene, and
Yeah.
she's dating Mick Jones of The Clash. And so I'm going to be discussing that tomorrow. I do like a vinyl and book pairing where I'll play a little bit of the vinyl and then I'll talk about the book for like 3 or 4 minutes
Very
and
cool.
do just kind of like a quickie review so that my head is in her book right now, even though I read it like 2 or 3 years ago. Last week I did Patti Smith. Next week I'm going to do Come As You Are by by Michael
Nice.
Azered, who did the Nirvana book. I read that 3 times. I read
Really?
that when I was 12, and my mom was like, I'll buy you this book, but not if it's a drug book. And I'm like, Mom, it's of course not about drugs. Greg, the whole book is about like Kurt shooting off
Oh
in his
yeah, I'm
stomach.
sure.
And like the whole book is about drugs. But I discovered so many bands because of this book. Like I discovered Dinosaur Jr., the Pixies, Babes in Toyland, Sonic Youth, at freaking 12 years old. So
Wow.
I mean, that okay, if the book changed my life, it was that one.
I just saw Dinosaur Jr. on their reunion tour, or it was a not a reunion tour. They're because they're a Massachusetts band. They actually are one of the few bands from Western Mass, but they just did a tour actually all through Europe, and they came back to the States for their 1993 album Where You Been, which is one of my favorite albums of all time. And that was excellent. And I had a thought and I lost it. Oh, TikTok. Where can people find you on TikTok? Just by typing in your name, or do you have like a name to your TikTok?
It's Lisa Michaud, author.
Okay. All right.
It's a new world for me. I only just started getting on it about a month ago, but
Ah,
I just feel
welcome.
like, yeah, it's a new realm. I feel a little old sometimes on it,
I'm
but
right there with you. Right there with you, Lisa.
right? Yeah, but I'm
Yeah.
connecting with some cool vinyl people and some other authors. So, why not?
Yeah. It's funny, in a lot of my episodes, I reluctantly mention TikTok, and I don't want to offend anybody, but yeah, it's definitely been the social media thing for me has been tough to adjust to, because I can find myself, okay, I'm just going to look at this one thing, and then like 2 hours go by. And like you were saying earlier, like as a parent, as a husband, as a professional, I'm worried a lot about wasting time. And so I do have some concerns, but I will say social media and my presence on there has brought me introductions to so many wonderful people around the world. And so I really have gotten a lot more of the value out of it than really the negativity, but you really have to police yourself, I think. So,
Absolutely.
as a musician, and at one point, as I mentioned, you know, I was this was in the late 90s, early 2000s. I was doing some touring, nothing huge, but just, you know, in a van around local areas. And there were times where I'd do a gig and there'd be 50 people there. And to me, that was a lot. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then there'd be a gig where I'd be two people there. And I can remember getting on the subway, going back home with my guitar, my bass, or my guitar in my case, and saying, oh, man, I don't know. For authors who were thinking about, or prospective authors, what's some of your advice to some of those that are thinking of quitting or giving up?
I would say, just try not to compare yourself to other authors or other people who seem like they're quote unquote killing it. I hate that expression.
So do I.
I really do. It's up there with "you got this." I hate both of those. It's like, no, I don't. I don't have it. Leave me alone. But it's just, you know, I posted something on my author Instagram. There's a saying in 12-step recovery, it's called compare and despair. And when we compare ourselves to other people, we're obviously going to feel that despair, because you can never live up to somebody else's journey. We all have our strengths and our struggles. So I say, compare yourself to yourself a year ago and see, you know, have you progressed? A year ago, I didn't have the second book finished. So I'm awesome. I finished my book. A year ago, I was, you know, 3 months sober. Now I'm a year and 3 months sober. So just compare it to yourself, to who you were a year before, and you're going to feel really good about yourself, and to just keep going.
It's amazing how this whole formula works, because a lot of times I write down questions and I feel like if I do it right, if that's even the right word, the individual ends up answering my next question by answering the question before that, which you pretty much almost did. But I maybe ask you to elaborate more on this one. What would the present day you say to the young you right now?
I would tell her that everything is going to work out. Yeah. And my grandmother always told me that. She's like, when, you know, you just get so worked up over something, it will work out. Everything works out the way it should. And she would always say, "This too shall pass," which is also a recovery saying, but it's true. You just get through it, and just to not stress so much. At 21, I was an extra in Hollywood, and which is really funny. Ah, hold on. I thought of you. I'm just detouring for one hot second.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Rewatching the OC, and the line that you like, I'm going to go home and listen to Ted Nugent came
no,
out
no,
a few
no,
weeks
Bob,
ago.
Bob Seger, right?
Wasn't Bob it? Seger, Bob Seger, yeah. Yes. And I'm going to go home and listen.
She goes, "I'm going to blare." That was the funny part. It was like an aggressive, like, "I'm going to fucking blare Bob Seger."
Yeah. So I saw that, because for the listeners, just to catch you up to speed, I'm rewatching the OC, because I was an extra on it in season one. And when I met Greg a few weeks ago on Zoom, he had told me that was his favorite line in the show, that "I'm going to go home and blare Bob Seger." And I just saw that episode and I thought of you, and I was saying to my husband,
nice,
that's the line. And she doesn't. She does listen to Bob Seger.
Yeah, because the next scene, a couple scenes later, someone knocks on her door. I forget who it was. I mean, we're going back 20 years now that I remember this episode. But and the door opens and she answers it, and Bob Seger's blaring in the background. And I was like, yeah, she lived up to her word. So yeah, it's those little connections, like with right out of the gate with your Herbie Hancock and your Grateful Dead and Zeppelin references, you know, talking about the way the sun hits them. I mean, it just, Lisa, this is stuff that I don't really read a lot. And so I have to say it connected with me on so many levels. Even if you hadn't mentioned music at all, I would have connected with these characters. But both Carla and Pete, and I've also been in situations where I've had, you know, an interest in somebody, and I've had an Allison in my life. And so I can't say enough, regardless of your taste in music, this is a book that I think you will enjoy. Because for all of us listening to this right now, we've all been teenagers at one point. And I think what I went through, sort of what keeps me sane when I think about, you know, my kids, because I'm like, wow, they're really, I don't want to say rebelling, but they're definitely acting like teenagers. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I was like that too. So, you know, I'm conscious of your time, obviously, and we're wrapping up here in a minute, but I guess, thank you for, you know, for joining me and talking about your journey as a music lover and an author. And I want to make sure that I'm getting this right for all the listeners. You can pick up a copy of Lisa's book, Slanted and Disenchanted. And is it at lisamichaud.com? Is that the best place to go?
LisaCMichaud.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did write There's that. The and C I just in didn't there, pronounce yeah. that. Okay. I'm glad you. So LisaCMichaud.com. LisaCMichaud.com. You can also, if it's all right with you, you know, to help further sales, I'd like to put a copy of your book up on my website that people can go to, and it'll direct them to your site so they can purchase the book. I sometimes will put the Amazon link up there as well, just to make it easier for people. I've done that for the last several authors that I've interviewed, and it's not only an opportunity for them to, you know, if they're browsing through my website to pick up, I do have a bookstore section of my store. I also put a lot of books up there that have influenced me and or have really, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Touched me in some certain way, for lack of a better term. So if it's all right with you, I'd love to put that up there.
Thank you. I'd love it. Yeah. I'd be honored. Thank you.
And you can also, she mentioned her TikTok. You can also follow Lisa on Instagram at Lisa Michaud, no C.
It's Lisa Michaud Author.
Lisa Michaud Author. Okay.
Yeah. You follow my personal account, which is fine.
I do. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you can also follow Lisa on Instagram at Lisa Michaud Author, and then on Facebook at Lisa Serena Michaud. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. And basically nowadays you can just type in the name and the page will likely come up. So I realize.
Hold on. Tu peux allumer la lumière, s'il te plaît. You can see me now. I don't want to get up. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, you've got some really cool pictures on there as well. So what else? Is there anything else that I've missed, Lisa? I feel like I asked you a lot of the questions that were burning inside me, but I can't reiterate again just how much I enjoyed your book and digging into your story. And I feel like I know a lot more about you. And I think it helps too that you're, you know, a woman who grew up in the Northeast, had somewhat of a similar upbringing. Although I didn't grow up in New York City, both my families were from that area, Jersey and then New York. So I just related a lot. But is there anything else that I might have missed or anything else you wanted to touch upon?
Oh, I think you covered it. Thank you for reading my book. Really, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And I'm looking forward to the next one. And if you would do me the pleasure of being on a guest on another episode in the future, we could talk about your next book, because I definitely want to read that. And you said that's going to be out. I'm sorry. You said at the end of the year?
Towards the end of the year. The deadline is we're thinking September.
Yeah.
But just to give you a little taste, it's 2004. We're in California. And we're in Paris Hilton culture. We have reality shows have just started. We have American Idol. We have basically the antithesis of all of these wonderful pop culture, these wonderful musical references comes shattering down on my musical characters' lives. Maroon 5, we have Coldplay. I basically took my characters, and as like rock snobby as they are, and I dropped them in the belly of the beast of just pop culture that they just are against. So, yeah. And I thought I played with those characters a lot and have some secondary characters who like love all of this stuff, and Perez Hilton, and and the internet plays a big part in it. MySpace. Nice. It becomes not a main character by any means, but it's just that beginning of when we start communicating and relationships change based on what we see online. And that was something we didn't have, at least in my first book. It was 2000, 2001.
Right.
So I jumped them to 2004 because I wanted to show the difference of where we are. And it's an election year. We're in the Iraq war. There's a lot going on. So I try not to get too political, but it's there. So I'm really excited for the second book because I'm challenging my characters big time because they're not in that cozy world of like records. They're in Los Angeles.
Yeah, right. Well, you certainly challenge that with, I mean, another one of a billion chapters that stuck out in Slanted and Disenchanted was when you talk about September 11th. And I mean, I think I was on a walk when I was listening to that part and, you know, I got goosebumps and I started to feel the pain that I felt on that exact day and the sorrow, and you really capture that. And so I thought to myself, like, good God, I mean, this is such a, she's talking about the things that I also experience as well. So I could listen to the story, connect on the reality of it, but then also be like, I went through like the, almost the exact same thing. Now, my mother wasn't a flight attendant, but just calling everybody that day. And so anyway, I don't want to end on a negative note, but I was just really impressed that you added that part in it too. So like, as the book got really light, it got deep at many points as well. And I can only imagine that sounds like you're obviously carrying that along to your next one. I also would like to ask if you're ever interested in coming back on and reviewing an album. I really enjoy, more so than doing it myself, I really enjoy reviewing an album with guests because I get always a different perspective about the album. So maybe we can email in the next couple of weeks. And if there's an album that you mentioned a bunch already, maybe one of those we could do, or something that, you know, you have a passion for. Because I really enjoy doing that as well. So
I would absolutely love it. That's like one of my dreams.
Cool. Well, Lisa, thank you again so much. I can't thank you enough. I hope you have a good rest of your Sunday evening there. I hope to get back to France. I've got some unfinished business there. I don't know if I told you my story, but the week I was there, when I finally got to, I love driving around Europe. And so we rented a car and drove out to the country. And we got to our Airbnb. We were in Epernay. And about 2 hours later, I was cooking my dinner and I was like, this is definitely a bucket list moment. And I remember I was chopping cucumbers and I was making a salad and I was cooking chicken. And, you know, in those French houses, you know, I had to open the shutters and I'm looking out onto the vineyard and all of a sudden I got violently ill. And I have no idea how to this day. I don't know what I touched. I don't know what I, you know, and so I spent the rest of the trip throwing up. But to my wife's credit, she plopped down to a local pharmacy, which I was unbelievably impressed with, not only the service, but the medicine. And she got me the stomach medication. And the next morning, I mean, I was violently throwing up. And then my son caught it, my oldest. But by the next, I would say afternoon, late morning, early afternoon, I was back in the car driving back to Paris. And I thought to myself, okay, at least I'm not like pulling over every 5 seconds here. And I had to give credit to the medicine there. But anyway, I tell everybody when I talk about my trip to France, I've got some unfinished business because I really didn't get to enjoy that time and just sitting there and watching the sunset right as the sun was setting that night. I was in the bathroom.
Puking
my brains out. So, but
you got to come back.
It's definitely, it's definitely something, you know, I experienced the hustle and bustle of Paris and you know what? I loved it. I enjoyed it, but I really want to experience the country. That's what I think makes me tick a lot more now. So, but thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday and let's definitely set a time to do this again and review an album. And then when your next book comes out, let's do it again.
Great. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
This was awesome. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Just great job. It was a really enjoying read and I felt definitely I was laughing a lot about, you know, thinking about my childhood too. So.
Oh, cool. Oh, wait, can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Will you hold up my book and can I take a screenshot? So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Here we go. Okay. Cool. Oh, wait, hold on. I have to.
Take your time.
I have to pose better. Okay.
I loved it. Yeah. It was great.
Thank you again.
You're very welcome. I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast, and thanks again to Lisa Michaud for joining me. Lisa is just another person who I've met along this podcasting journey who has really helped me to understand what makes so many people successful, and most importantly, what makes them stay positive during hard times. You can pick up a copy of Lisa's book, Slanted and Disenchanted, in the bookstore at albumreview.net and at lisacmichaud.com. That's LisaCMichaud.com. You can also follow Lisa on Instagram at Lisa Michaud, on Facebook at Lisa Serena Michaud, and on TikTok at Lisa Michaud Author. And remember, if you're interested in any of the albums or books that I've discussed in this episode or previous episodes, go to albumreview.net and pick up a copy of your own. Listen to all my podcast album reviews at albumreview.net by, of course, clicking on the podcast tab. They can also be heard wherever podcasts are available, any platform. Please follow the show on your preferred platform so you can get regular updates on new episodes. Also, if you guys would be so kind as to pop a quick review or rate the podcast, that helps move the needle and get the word out there. I do want to hear from you. Please email me your feedback, album review requests, and any questions that you might have to gpotters@albumreview.net. That's gpotters at albumreview.net. If you'd like to get regular updates on reviews, interviews, product and music news, go to the homepage and join the mailing list. Visit our YouTube page and stay tuned for updates on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. You can find me at albumreview.net. So that's all for now. Until next time. See you guys.
Take a trip down by the highway. 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 Take a trip down by my highway.